the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Welcome to the Run Run Live Podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners and midpackers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Microsoft Sam. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run Run Live Podcast, come visit me at www.microsoft.com, where we try our best to get you up and running, but usually end up perfecting the blue screen of death. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I'm from Microsoft, so I only run occasionally. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
Hello and welcome to episode 92 of the Run Run Live podcast. This is Mad Dog, your host, Chris. Hope everyone is doing fantastic. I'm coming out of the backside of some furious travel and work, and I'm feeling like I need a vacation. How about you? Don't you just feel wrung out this time of year? I know I do. It would seem that I have a marathon to race in 2 days. I have to admit it, I'm stressing out a little bit over it. I think this is my 26th or 27th or somewhere around there marathon, and I'm already qualified for Boston, so it doesn't even count, but they all count. My screwy running disease makes me somehow come to the conclusion that I need to step up and give it my all and break myself on the course. So the game is on. As a result, I've been sleeping crappy all week, and I've been grumpy. So why do I put the pressure on myself? I don't know. I guess it's just my nature. We've got an interesting show for you today. We've got an interesting interview with Epic Bill Bradley, who's a guy who has a great story. He basically dropped out of the rat race and began running ultra races instead. And it's cool to see how easy it is to just decide to do something else with your life. And I'm always also going to insert a story I wrote about people dying in races. There's been a lot of that in the news lately. I know it's a little morbid, but it's the cycle of life for all of us. And what better time than Halloween for this article, yeah? I'm not going to chew up any more of the valuable airspace here. Let's get you out the door and on the road. On with the show.
And now for our featured interview.
All right, we're back.
Okay.
And it's working. So I'm back once again with the Epic Bill Bradley. And I told you, Bill, that the only other person I've had trouble recording with was Dave McGilvery, the race director for the Boston Marathon. And
well, I'm in good company then.
That's right. He was I think it was like episode 9 or something. So up until that point, I'd been interviewing friends and family. And this was sort of my first big deal interview with one of the luminaries of our sport. And so I was so nervous I didn't record it right when I talked to Dave the first time. He's a great guy. So the Epic Bill Bradley, who I think is running 900 million miles this year and swimming and biking and carrying tree trunks on his shoulders and other crazy stuff. But you have done a number of the famous and lesser famous ultra events. And you've been at this for a few years now, So, you know, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit of your resume, and tell us how you, you know, you snapped a couple years back and started doing all this this weird ultra stuff.
Oh, yeah. What my resume is, I came from a Ironman background. I've done, like, 7 Ironmans over, like, a 9-year period. I kind of was in a little bit of a rut. If I didn't have, you know, beat my time, then I was, like, felt like the whole year was wasted. And anyway, I kind of went through about 4 years ago now, almost 4 years. I went through a bankruptcy and a divorce. I had a chain of video stores that just that whole industry kind of went south. And one of the things I'm really good at is not quitting. So I think I rode that out a little too long. So anyway, but I had a newer marriage at that point, and that didn't survive either. So I was walking around with my, you know, I really lost my confidence, and I couldn't even look people in the eyes. And I was, you know, I've always gone, you know, if you can do something epic, stretch yourself or something, it's something that builds your confidence. And a friend of mine, I had talked about doing a 50-miler for a long time, and I'd never quite pulled the trigger on it. I had a little bit of ego for some weird reason, like if I didn't finish, you know, everybody would know. And so I, my friend said, you know, you've been talking about a 50-miler, there's one tomorrow. And I really wasn't doing much training then. I was back with a job and stuff. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was kind of like Tom Cruise, you know, what the bleep. And I set my alarm for like 3 in the morning, and I that's Tom Cruise in Risky Business. And I went out and ran my first 50-miler, you know. So, and then I was like kind of standing a little taller, looking people in the eye again, felt, you know, a lot better about myself. Confidence was growing, and that kind of started the ball rolling to where, you know, it's pretty hard to shut me up now.
Yeah, and I think one of the cool things about your story is that it's the classic story that we all love, which is you're in the dumps, you hit bottom, you know, you're slouched over and depressed, and you had a choice to make, and you chose to just go out and set a goal and do something, you know, a little bit wacky. But I mean, I've seen that so many times in successful people. And so, you know, tell me a little bit about what you learned from that.
Oh, I think I learned that, you know, no matter how low you can get, you can crawl yourself out of it. I mean, I tell you one thing I do is I definitely count my blessings, because I'd called my buddy. I was sitting there in my little rental house. I'd lost a big house on the hill, the fancy cars, everything. And I said, you survived the bankruptcy a while ago. How did you do that? He goes, you need to count your blessings. And I go, well, can you start me off? And he goes, you got your health. And I go, yeah, I got my health. And that's pretty much what I do, like, every night. At least when I start getting a little depressed or something, I will count my blessings, you know. And I, you know, I go through my kids and things like that. And I don't got to go very far until I feel much better about myself. But your health is huge, and I think that's one of the things I just try and maximize that as best I can at all times now, I think, you know, so.
Sure, and that's one of the classic tips that folks who do this for a living, they tell you to build a little balance sheet of the things that are good instead of dwelling on all the things that are bad, and that's one way to get yourself psyched up. So tell me about your recent swim in the ocean.
So I went out. I was on a roll this year. I had done, you know, this is sitting at 100 in Alaska. You know, pulling a 40-pound sled that I'd finished. I went and did 250 miles local here in the Bay Area, and I ran 250, you know, basically following the course Dean, you know, wrote about in his book, The Ultramarathon Man, and then I added 50 more miles on that. And then I turned around and went and biked solo ram across America. You know, I did that in 16 days and came back 9 days later and ran Badwater and completed that in 59 hours. And then my goal was, like I said, that those last three were the ultimate triathlon, world's toughest bike run. And so I said, heck, I'm going to swim the English Channel. And, you know, this is already planned out. You got to book it like almost a year in advance with a pilot. And so I went out and I, you know, I had done some training earlier in the year, but I'd really focused on the bike because ram is so difficult. And then I just crammed for like, you know, like an 8-week program of swimming like crazy. I did like 3 6-hour swims in the bay. That's where you're, you know, you can't touch a boat. You can't, nothing. You got to, you know, they hand you your food, but you can't hold on anything. And right. So then I went over to try the English Channel, and the English Channel was Boy, it was a lot harder than San Francisco Bay. I couldn't believe how rough that was. It was nothing like I had experienced. I knew I was in a little bit of trouble when I went to swim for shore, where they drop you off to start, and I went to stand up, and I actually got hit by a big wave and face planted on the beach, and I was like, wow, Bill, what have you gotten yourself into? And it was rougher than the pilot had thought, because a rainstorm had blown through in the middle of the night. And so he said, the first half hour is going to be really rough. And then after that, for the next hour and a half, it's just going to be rough. And then it should settle down. Well, that first half hour when I jumped in, I was shocked. I had never experienced anything even close to this. I mean, I was like getting banged all over the place. I could barely tell which way was up. And all I could think was the guy had told me before how one of his guys had only lasted 15 minutes because he froze up in shock. And all I could think of was we both laughed. And all I could think was, man, I don't want to be a laughing stock. I got to at least make it 15 minutes. So I pretty much battled this thing. And for about 4 hours, about 3:45, I just started throwing everything up. I think it was a combination of it was so rough when I hear the boat, the waves were coming over my head, and I try and drink, and I only got down one bottle in 4 hours, you know, treading with one arm while you're trying to drink. I mean, I didn't play, you know, water polo or anything. I just, I actually could only swim back and forth in the pool one time when I was like 35 years old. So, and then I took up the Ironmans and stuff. So, but it was but I think, you know, like I said, it was a heck of a learning experience. I could not get myself to calm down. Mentally, I never quit, so I was happy with that. I swam till I almost drowned. My guy had looked out at me and told one of the girls to get her wetsuit on. He says, Bill's got about 5 minutes till his head goes under. So I swam as long as I could swim. But then on the other end, I couldn't get myself to relax to process my food and stuff. I was in such a, it was such a, for me, not being a natural swimmer or come from a swimming background when I was younger and stuff, I'm not that comfortable in the water. So that just like, it shook me. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, I've studied a lot of ways I want to go. And, you know, I don't mind freezing up in Alaska or anything, but I really don't want to go drowning. It doesn't look that fun. And so I got things to work on this year. I'm trying to figure out if I can get that in my schedule next year. I'm definitely going to do it either this year or next year, try it again. I learned a lot. I need a little more time. I will make that my focus. Like I said, I'm swimming now, you know, so I'm kind of leaning towards this year if I can dig up and get in the right spot with a pilot and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get that right, you know, like one or two position or something, so you got some choices.
Yeah. I mean, you do it a little differently, or not differently, but I know folks that will train for like a year and a half for one of these major events, and that's all they'll do is train for that event, but you seem to slam them all together 1 month after another. I mean, is that, why do you do that? Is just part of your psyche, or what's the advantage?
Well, I get bored really easily, but I honestly believe if you keep your fitness level high in one field, you can bring it over. My arms weren't even tired when I finished that English Channel thing. I was just not getting enough water, not getting enough food processing. But, you know, like this one girl I was saying, I go, well, how could I bike, you know, for 16 days across America? You know, I'm on the bike seat 18 hours a day, you know, 3 hours of sleep. I never did that before. How can I run 135 miles through Death Valley? You know, I never did that before. Well, I've done it twice now. But, you know, how can you do these things? It's energy that's in you. You know, that's what I believe. You can push that energy into whatever you're doing if your fitness level, you keep it real high. So I just always keep training in one thing or another, you know. So
yeah, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. If you maintain a certain level of conditioning, you can lay the other stuff on as sort of like specialty workouts, and it takes you, so you can tune up for an event, because I'm doing the same thing with like marathons and that size event, not as big as you're doing, but you can tune up for an event in like 4 or 6 weeks.
You're exactly right. I mean, they were down at the Dolphin Club, which has hardcore swimmers, and they are, you know, they've had several, you know, like numerous people swim the channel. And I go down there and I'd hang out with them, and they were shocked how quick I could do a 4 hour, 6 hour swim with no wetsuit in that water, high 50s, you know, 59 to 61 when I was swimming there. And but a lot of it is mental, you know. I mean, I'm just mentally, from doing all these events, I'm really, really tough. I mean, it's hard to get me to cry uncle nowadays, although I don't want to drown.
Yeah, it's sure. There's a lot of maturity in it, and you do enough ultra events that you don't have to worry about the negative voices in your head anymore.
Because that's what they were saying. A lot of the English Channel is mental. Now, I had crewed at Badwater. I had done a two-man RAM before I did RAM. You know, so when I went in the English Channel, no idea what I was getting into, other than watching a few videos and stuff. So now I know the monster that I face, and I'll be much more prepared. You know, I'll have those demons under control. I'll practice drinking with water coming over my head, and you know, and just I'll know what I'm dealing with the next time. So I think I'll definitely give it a much better shot.
So what's on your calendar for this year?
I'm just ready. I was so busy last year that I didn't really pencil things in. But I was just talking to the race director for the Arrowhead 135, which sounds sort of like, you know, I did the Susitna 100 in Alaska. It's sort
right.
of like the Susitna 100 on steroids, it sounds like. Because, I'm not exactly sure where you're from, Chris, but I'm out in California. And when I do Susitna and stuff, I train on the beach pulling a 40-pound sled. And then I go in this meat locker, and I ride my stationary bike between, like, negative 20 and negative 30 to try and get the lay of the land. Well, I guess the Arrowhead is 135. And it goes down to, like, I guess it can go down to, like, negative 50, you know, things like that.
So it's got to be in Canada.
No, it's in Minnesota.
Okay, so it's right in the center of the country where the coldest part is.
It must be. And so it's, like, 135 miles, and, like, only 8 people finished out of 26 last year because it was so extreme. It went from 35 to, like, negative 35. So you get the soft, slushy snow. And I know you run a little bit, Chris, in the snow. And the soft stuff is brutal, you know. And then it got, like, really, really cold, which I've never really experienced running cold below zero yet. My Susitna ones were those soft, slushy ones, which those aren't real fun. They work you. Your feet constantly are sliding, you know. So
yeah, it's a lot of work. It's like running in the soft sand on the beach. It's a lot of lateral strength. It chews up a lot of energy.
Yeah, but then I think I'm going to... You want to hear any more of them? Or,
No. Let me ask you about this running in the below zero. The hardest part for
sure.
me is always, you know, because you're still sweating. You're still going through a lot of fluids, even though it's below zero. So you end up, like, caked in ice, right?
I don't know. I've only rode my little stationary bike in below zero.
Yeah, so you end up with, like, this, because you're wearing wicking fabric, right? So it wicks it away from your body, and then it freezes on the outside. So you end up running in, like, a ice shell, you know, and I've had races where I've run, you know, 20 miles or so in that weather, and at the end I could barely move my arms because my sweater was so hard.
Well, you're getting me pumped up, I could tell. I'm actually, my friend recommended, one of my friends from Alaska, that I go to a survival, you know, like snow survival, whatever, in Alaska. They got one up there, and you actually do snow biking and stuff. And I'm going to see about signing up for that before I go do this. I think they take you out in a real extreme area, and you hang out for, like, 5 days with, like, nothing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? So I'll learn a little more survival skills because, you know, I kind of want to – I mean, I love doing this stuff, but I sort of want to hold on to my parts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
frostbite's
my fingers
issue.
And toes, I don't want to have to – you don't want to do a high five. I want 5 fingers so I can still do it.
Yeah, so what else are you working on?
Well, I think I'm gonna do a combo. I love that 200-mile run. Like I said, the one I've done it 2 times, and I did 250 last year. And it's local in my area, and I like doing it with, you know, last year I had to do it a couple weeks before. I just kind of did it on my own because RAM was too close. But what I want to do this year is I think I'm gonna run 100 miles, swim the Golden Gate, and then run another 100 miles. So it's kind of my new plan. I think that'd be kind of cool. and then I'm going to come back, and I think I'm going to go for a double Badwater this year and get that under my belt. And then, I can work something.
So how are you going to do that? You going to turn around and run back? Are you going to do 2 days in a row, or what are you going
to
do?
No, you run it, and then you run all the way to the peak. You got to go to the peak on this, and then you go back.
Okay.
So you're going to do 270, 280 miles. You know, because
with the mountain. Yeah, with a mountain.
Yeah, because the mountain's another, like, 5 miles straight up, I think.
Yeah.
we're going to the portal, you know, then you got to go on the trail and you got to get a permit. This stuff's all in the incubation stages, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm signing up right now for the first thing, but this is all kind of my plan. And like I said, and then I would go back and if I could get the right slot and stuff, I'd come back and swim that English Channel again. I don't overly like swimming, but I'm just saying I don't overly like swimming in cold water with no wetsuit, but I really hate not finishing something, so that's worse. So,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that sounds very difficult. So you're pretty tied in with the outdoor community out there. I know some of those guys crew for you, and you crew for them, and, you know, like, do you run with Dean and those guys?
I don't know Dean real well. No, those guys are all way faster than me, man. Remember, I show up and suffer, you know. Dean's won Badwater. Last year, because I did Badwater 9 days after Ram, I finished in 59 hours and, like, 11 minutes, and the cutoff 60 hours. No,
wow.
I'm back with, I just show up and suffer, man. I'm not fast. I just show up and suffer. That's my MO. These guys are way, Dean, I'm not even in his league, you know, so as far as speed goes.
Yeah, but in the ultra community, everybody sort of knows everybody.
Yeah, I know a lot of the local people up here in the North Bay, you know, who I do run with occasionally. You know, a lot of the girls, Susanna Bond, who's a great runner, Kelly Ridgway, who's a great runner. I mean, I'm more familiar with them up in the North Bay who train in my area, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you do all this stuff, Bill? I mean, how do you work this into your lifestyle?
Well, like I said, I'm out of wives. My kids are grown. I just, you know, so I can go out and say, hey, I'm going to go bike four times around Lake Tahoe, and I just go for like a day and a half or whatever, or a day, you know, 30 hours and just bike it, you know. And, you know, so I got a lot of freedom on the weekends. I mean, my retirement is going to be spent saying, would you like hot sauce with that?
Yeah.
I'm blowing all my money on these races. But I am hoping, my goal is to be a motivational speaker. You know, I'm doing some of that. I'm announcing races. I've done like three marathons, half marathons. I really love those. I just did one last weekend because I know what the people feel. And I love the people at the front. Those are my friends and stuff. But the people at the back, I know what they feel. And so I, you know, the guy goes, well, you know, you don't have to give it your all the whole time. And I go, I can't stand it because the people at the end, man, they're out there two or three times as long as the guys in the front. And I go, and they're working just as hard or harder, you know, to finish in such a long time. So I screamed myself hoarse last weekend. So that's one of the things, you know. Hopefully I'll start picking up some sponsors as you get more known. I'm starting to work on a book. So I started to do a little bit of that. And, you know, she just kind of hit it from every angle. And, yeah, I want to make a living at what I love. And I love, like, you know, going out and doing these crazy races. I don't know why. I just have really extreme issues of some sort.
Sure, sure. So what's your website? How do people get in touch with you or find out?
Yeah, the two best ways right now is I got 1,100 and some people follow me on Twitter, which is Epic Bill Bradley. And then I got a website where I do record a lot of these races. In these last three, I'm working on those this weekend because I was so busy. But and then we put them on YouTube, and they're on my website. So, like, the one in Alaska, my sister, because I was out by myself for, like, 40 hours out there in the middle of nowhere in a snowstorm, and she goes, Bill, that one really makes you look crazy. but anyway, so my website is billbradley.org.
All right. You know, like I usually ask you, or I asked you last time, you know, what are the three things you would leave people with? Doesn't have to be three, but, I mean, what would be the top messages you'd want to give people that are listening?
Yeah, I think it's, like, to get yourself out of your comfort zone. You know, I mean, I can't tell you, like, when you stretch yourself and you go out of your comfort zone, your confidence rises in all areas of your life. When I go up that hill at Badwater, and I got that 11-mile climb, and once I know I'm going to finally finish that darn thing, I'm crying practically. I mean, I'm, you know, inside, and, you know, I'm starting to choke up. I mean, it's so emotional to finish something like that, and, you know, you're trashed for a couple of days. You can't really walk. Your feet are on fire. But when you things settle down, I mean, your confidence just goes through the roof. It just makes your whole life a lot better. Even when I had all the money, everything I had before, my daughter says I'm happier now. because I'm following my dreams now, you know, I'm going to figure out, and I did, you know, like I said, you can make a living doing what you love, you know, you don't want to be sitting around in life and being miserable, you know, in some cubicle somewhere with some job you hate, you know, you're better off getting out there and making a little less money and making yourself happy. So I think that's a big thing is to, you know, try and do what you love and get out there and just really stretch yourself. Because what's the difference between a grave and a rut? It's just the depth of the hole. So that's where you want to, you know, you don't want to be stuck sitting there like you'd rather be whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, so good. So good. That's it. We're going to let you go now. So glad we could finally put it all together. And good luck with all this. You know, if you're ever out the East Coast where I am out by Boston, I'll come out and crew for you, run a few miles with you.
We'll run together. We'll run and we'll be all coated in ice with our sweaters on.
Yeah, I like running in the cold.
Oh, I'm learning to love it.
it was snowing this morning in Boston, you know.
Yeah,
in Boston, but where I live.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, the people in the cold areas are tough. I respect it. You know, Alaska, just talking to the lady in Minnesota yesterday, the race director, I mean, they are tough. I love it. You know, there's just no messing around there.
All right, man. I'm going to let you go.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we'll stay in touch, all right?
Okay, thanks.
All right, bye.
See, Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
Well, I'm driving to work. Good morning. A guy in front of me has a pickup truck full of wood. Looks like maybe nice, dry, seasoned red oak. Good wood. Good wood for the fireplace. We get a lot of trees up here in New England, us Yankees as they are, and we like to burn our wood. Smells good. Nice and warm. Fun to chop. I got a couple days now to the Marine Corps Marathon, so I thought I might go through a checklist, a Ben Franklin, as it were, lay out the pros and cons as I'm driving to work in my head. When I drive to work in the morning, my mind is just like going 100 miles an hour. The wheels are spinning about all the different things I got going on. It's kind of cool for the Marine Corps in a couple days. Well, I'm in decent shape. Aerobically, I'm in pretty good shape. My lungs are strong. My leg muscles are strong. I got the pace. I've been getting some really good speed work in, some really good track workouts in. So I got the pace. I got the leg strength. I've only been training specifically for the marathon for a month or so, so I don't have a lot of good specific tempo long runs like I like to do. I like to, if I'm racing a marathon, I like to put in more than three 30Ks or 20 milers in a race format to be comfortable with that kind of pace at that distance. So that's a con. I don't think I have enough high mileage runs in. The high mileage runs I did were training runs, so slow and easy. I haven't done a lot of racing, but I have been doing great speed work, so I think I'll be okay. What else have I got? I'm not sick, knock on wood. There isn't any in the Camry, but I would if it was here. Not sick at all. I'm starting to get some sleep. Last night I got a good night's sleep. Last 2 weeks I've been on fire at work and everything else. It's just that busy time of year. For me, I'm a little heavy. I'm still running around 190 plus, which is 5 or 6 to 10 pounds heavier than I should be to race a marathon. So on the pro side, I got experience on my side. I know what's going to happen. I know what to do. On the con side, it's the Marine Corps is a new race for me. I don't know the race. I don't know the course. I don't have a strategy for it. So overall, my assessment is, you know, about a B+. I think my challenge is going to be those last 6 miles. And those are going to become a challenge because of my initial challenges. I'm going to have a challenge getting slotted in a place where I can break free early on without wasting a lot of energy. I'm going to have a challenge in managing my energy throughout the first two-thirds of the race to put myself in a position for that moment of truth at mile 20 to 22. And then it's going to be a challenge. I'm going to have some tough decisions to make in the high miles as to whether I'm going to be a dog or a lion. So that's my assessment. I think it's pretty good because I think, you know, when you go into a race like this, you got three choices, two of which I use. My two choices that I typically use are the steady state race, which you just lock into your planned pace early and just hold it and put yourself in a position to hold that through the finish line or pick it up a little bit, or if you lose something, not lose too much. And then there's the sort of go out too fast and put it in the bank theory, which I've been successful with before, which says that if you can put 5 to 10 minutes in the bank by the time you get to the 30K mark, then even if you struggle, if you can hold on, you're only going to give back, 7 minutes. So I've done that before, and it's kind of heroic, but probably stupid at the same time. I think the results end up about the same. The other thing in terms of cons is I haven't really been doing a lot of race-specific strategy training in terms of nutrition, on course, or, my walk-run ratio or any of that stuff. I'll make that up on the fly. I'll probably walk 2 minutes at each 5-mile water station, and I still have to look at the course and see where the water stations are and what kind of fuel they're going to have on the course and that sort of thing. I'll just, right now I got a half a box of chocolate number 9 gels. I'll use those and I'll carry a water bottle. I haven't decided whether I'm going to wear a belt or not. I don't like to race with a belt, but it does give me a place to stash my water bottle and a couple of gels. That's what I got. I give myself a B+ for this marathon. We'll see how it goes. So if I am able to not do something incredibly stupid and have a reasonably good day, should be good results. Right. Ciao.
It was Michael Myers. He's come home to kill.
With the recent spate of deaths in marathons, I figured I would read this one in for you. It's from one of my books. It's called Rest in Peace with a question mark. And the subtitle is, How is it supposed to end? Have the courage to live. Anyone can die. By Robert Cody. That's a quote. I've been thinking a lot about death today. Nothing morbid or suicidal, just coincidentally contemplating the end point. A delayed flight from Boston robbed me of my sleep and any chance of a morning workout. I draw the line at 4 hours of sleep. The Atlanta commute this morning was light with holiday traffic. I was scanning the rental car radio stations for something interesting to perk me up on my way to Starbucks. Mandatory. The team of perky talking heads was riffing on the recent Peachtree Road Race. This monster of a local event briefly captures the press once a year around here by cramming 50-odd thousand lucky runners through the streets of Atlanta. They were interviewing a man who died at the race, which I found interesting as much as they found it absurdly funny and fodder for their morning yucks. They seemed to revel in the irony that one of these crazy runners would succumb to exercise. It was like some sort of revenge for them, the non-athletes, getting to say, I told you so, like a NASCAR racer crashing his wife's SUV or a marriage counselor filing for divorce. Comedy of the absurd. That's what the listeners want. It's their bread and circus. I guess the weather was Africa hot for the race, as it often is in Atlanta in July. As you all can relate to, I'm sure, to put it clinically, running in the soupy hot weather sucks. It puts a bunch of stress on your body, especially so if your body, like mine, was designed for digging ditches and peat bogs outside County Clare, where the sun seldom shines and it's never hot. There were two men who dropped from cardiac arrest during the race. The second one, the one they interviewed, died. And even though death is always a noteworthy occurrence, his was quite dramatic. He evidently ran a strong race, careened across the finish, and dropped. You may have already guessed that the race officials and emergency personnel felt compelled to intervene in this drama and brought him back from the long tunnel, the bright light, etc. I know this because they also interviewed the ladies who kept his brain oxygenated with their CPR until the EMTs arrived and performed their Lazarus tricks. Death on the radio is not an uncommon theme, especially if you listen to NPR, but this struck close to home for a number of reasons. The first one being that this is really not my first brush with this scenario. The second is I've been feeling pretty old lately. The third is that I've always marveled at the hubris of athletes, and runners in particular, who think they can absolve all their genetic and lifestyle flaws with a good workout. It's actually not uncommon for folks to have their hearts give out during a road race. Also in the news this week, coincidentally, was Ken Lay's cheating the jailer's grasp by having his heart fail at his resort home in Vail. Evaporating $65 billion in net worth is, it would seem, about as stressful as a 10K in the hot sun. If you read the fine print on your next entry form, you'll discover that you understand long-distance running is a stressful activity that can result in injury or death. Race directors tend to downplay the significance of it, but it happens. Remember Jim Fix, the messiah of the first running boom? Jim ignored his family history of heart disease and other warning signs. Running didn't kill him, but it made for great irony in the media. I'm not suggesting everybody give up racing. I think if that bullet has your name on it, you probably can't hide from it by staying on the couch. The irony is that this gentleman who kicked the bucket briefly in Atlanta was probably in excellent shape. He was in his 60s and had been a lifelong runner. He did not have any symptoms or history of heart trouble. He did, however, have heart disease and a family history of heart disease. And it begs the question, would he have dropped walking to the car in his 50s if he wasn't a runner? I think from what I've read that running in general lowers your risk of heart disease. At the same time, running raises your probability of having it hit you while you're in the middle of a race. I've also read that when it does hit runners in a race, it typically puts them down for the count. It seems we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. Incidentally, he told the interviewers that he intended to keep running. That a boy, my kind of running. Cheat death, and then give it the finger in the exit interview. There's a special circle of Dante's hereafter for us. My personal experience with death in a race was on the other end of the weather spectrum. We had just finished running a popular hilly 16-miler on an Arctic 3-degree morning. That's Fahrenheit. And I guess the cold weather in hills of New Hampshire in February rival the hot, hilly south in July for heart stress. We were chatting in the chute when that runner hit the ground in front of us. He looked to be in decent shape. He was in his mid-30s. There was a cardiac surgeon with us who immediately started CPR. We got on the cell phone and had the ambulance there within 5 minutes, but he didn't make it. You hear a lot about death. But in our modern America, you rarely see it up front, up close. I was thinking back on that day this morning with the talk of mortality on the radio. I've felt really crappy in the last 2 weeks in my weekly Thursday night 3.4 miler in Westford, and I've been trying to figure out why. Actually, I had to stop and walk one night. The hot weather, the cycling I've been trying to cram in, the weird head cold I've been fighting, the lack of a compelling goal or race, the low mileage this year, the lack of committed training, or am I just old? Is this how it goes? You just don't feel good anymore? Oh, maybe I have Lyme disease. As usual, I figured it was just me trying to short my training, so I picked it up a little bit. Running some hill charges in Atlanta, working in some speed work in the baking sun down the Cape over the 4th, and stumbling through a 2-plus-hour long run over the weekend. Somehow, in my pre-human sub-brain, this is the best solution. I always assumed that I'd just keep running into my 80s like a slow version of John Kelly. After more contemplation and introspection of this morning, I'm going to take some time out of my busy schedule to find a qualified doctor and get the 50,000-mile checkup. You know the one I'm talking about, the one where they check all the fluids and grease all the fittings. Yikes! I recently had a physical for life insurance. My resting pulse before coffee was 35 beats per minute. I might already qualify for clinically dead. Like it or not, I don't think I'm a competent specialist in this regard, and I should probably take the time now instead of staring at the bright light at the end of the long tunnel where my grandparents wait for me. This brings us to the final point. What is it about runners that they think a hard workout erases all the effects of other lifestyle egresses? Why do we think a hard interval workout completely ameliorates the effects of a dozen hot wings with curly fries, or that a 3-hour long run perfectly balances the ill-acquired 12-pack on Friday night? From the editorials this morning, one thing is quite clear. Heart disease is genetic and lifestyle-based. Runners are a bit more protected from it than others because they exercise that pumping muscles, but they are not immune to Greece and predestination. Bottom line, exercise does not buy immortality. We are like medieval flagellants whipping away our sins to become pure again through suffering. It's funny if you think about it. I told my daughter half-jokingly before embarking on a marathon last fall, you know, if I die, call your mom and tell her I went doing what I love. There's some truth to that. Maybe it's not as heroic a death as we would write in our perfect script, but I'd much rather croak in front of the cameras on Hereford Street than in the toilet. As the early American Puritan poet Edward Taylor intoned, "A fig to thee, O death," from his bed after a life well lived. If you see me stumble and fall, clutching my chest and foaming at the mouth, by all means, do your best to keep me on this side of the curtain. And let's make a pact, you and I, that we'll go see the man or woman and have our chassis checked for our soundness before the summer is over. Because as slow as I am, I love the sport, and there are things I have yet to do. Besides, who'd run with Buddy the Wonder Dog if I was to pack it in? That's it, folks. You've soldiered through yet another episode of the Run, Run, Live podcast. I've got another good interview next week. Another long-distance nutter named Mark, a.k.a. Run Jordy Run, who is preparing to run across the USA for charity. He's already run across England. I'm beginning to think you'll need to get in line soon if you want to run across the country. You know, it'll be like, sorry, you need to take a ticket, you're on the waiting list, come back next year. The Transcontinental Shuffle is booked up for this season. So far, looks like everyone had nice weather for their fall marathons, and I'm seeing a lot of Boston qualifiers and fast times come over the wire from all my virtual friends, so sign up early for Boston. I think it's going to fill up quickly this year. Wish me luck at Marine Corps, should be fun. That's what I like about distance racing. You never know what's going to happen. Every time you toe the line, it's a new adventure. And partly you get to write the script. So feel free to follow me on Twitter or Facebook, CYKT Russell. I'm mildly entertaining when the mood strikes me, and I love to meet new people. Send me some audio. Record the intro for the show for me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Had an interesting Twitter conversation today. And this is a thought I'll leave you with. Someone was asking about the secret, quote-unquote, or the attractor factor. And I was trying to explain this to them. And basically the theory is that you should just do what you love and give freely to others without expecting anything in return. And you'll be surprised and rewarded by love and wealth and karma, etc., flowing back in a volume greater than which you had sent out originally. Stephen Covey, that crazy Mormon, he puts it this way: treat your relationships like bank accounts. So you must keep making deposits and build up a balance before you can ask for a withdrawal. Good stuff. Be well, stay cool, keep moving. Every day above ground is a good one. And yes, I will see you out there. Music tonight is just awesome. It's by a group called 346 Batting Center, and it's called Song of Fishing. And it's in Japanese, and it's really cool. I liked it. Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.